The agenda for today, the 9th of November, is to see in the forum, opening and welcome by the chair.
Apologies, adoption of the agenda, and then we go straight to the briefing by the Department of Labor on further cost implications regarding new proposals on the Labor Laws Amendment Bill, deliberations on the presentation, then consideration of the draft minutes of 2nd November, followed by committee reports on the first quarter, the oversight, and the public hearing. Thank you, Chair. I have received no apologies.
There's an agenda, members. Honorable Buffering.
I propose the agenda.
Come again? I can't hear you.
Sorry, I propose the agenda.
Okay, the proposal. Honorable Van Calvez. Thank you. It's proposed by Honorable Buffering. Honorable Van Calvez. I wish to welcome everybody in the meeting, in more especially the department. You were here last week. You are back again, which is not something that was in your plan. But that is today, we accept. We also thank you for the fact that you were able to respond positively to whatever Parliament wanted, because we need to satisfy ourselves before we can say yes or no. I will give over to the DG or yes.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, the committee will take us through the presentation of the information that was requested when we were here last week.
Over to you, Mr. Khalid.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, members of the committee. Members will remember, this slide is not new to the members. We did this presentation, I think, that was a month and a half ago when we did the presentation on the bill. And I'll just remind members, just for them to be able to deliberate on this issue, that the bill, as we indicated in the last meeting, was presented at NETLEC, and in the discussion at NETLEC, we indicated NETLEC wanted 18 months to give the previous bill, not this one, the one that went before this one, to see what would be the effect on the funds, finances, before putting other amendments, because there are other issues that NETLEC wanted. Then this private member's bill came, and just to remind members, the amendments in the bill that were hosted deal with short time, the people that are working for short time, whether they should be paid for the time that they are not earning any income, fixed term and seasonal employment, asylum seekers, informal and self-employed, because there is a proposal, a demand, not part of this bill, but it was a demand at NETLEC that the unemployment insurance pay informal employees who are unemployed. Now, these are not informal workers who work for small companies. It's about people who own their own business, sell fruits, informal in the street, sell veg, those people that sell veg. That the argument that they should be also be covered by unemployment insurance, and The other area is paternity leave, which the one that is in this bill. The informal employment is and self-employed is not in this bill, but paternity leave is covered in this bill. The other area that was also proposed by Medlac is the issue of resignation. As members would know, that you only get paid unemployment insurance fund if you dismiss, if you are dismissed constructively, constructive dismissal, if you resign as a result of constructive dismissal, but if you resign on your own, you don't get paid in terms of employment. Now, that's what the course is all about in all of those issues that I've indicated. Now, in the costing, you will see it's going to talk about part one, which is about extension of benefit to, remember, you are present to pay for 6 months, and the proposal is to pay for a year. It's going to talk about that. That's what 10 is part one. Part two is about maternity and illness. In the graph, when you look, when you see part one, you know that it's paternity and maternity. And part three, unemployment, the benefit cycle change. And then part four is going to be extension on death claims. And part five, extension on unemployment claim submission from 6 to 12 months. And then seven is including of testing on learnership and the 18 to people that are working on learnership. That's inclusion. And part eight will be payment of benefit in the case of reduced salary, that is short time. And then part nine, extension, as we indicated, for maternity leave. And then 10 is the inclusion of person employed in the informal sector, that's a network proposal. And 11 is payment for paternity leave in this bill. And 12, payment for person who have resigned. Those are the 12 areas that we look at in terms of the costing. Now, for members, if you look on the graph, this area is the current area. This is these are the costs to UI presently. When UI pay all the benefits that are currently, they are what UI, out of the 2% that UI get from employers, that 2% is used to pay, is used up to, what is it, 1.3%? And about 1.3%. That's why UI is able to increase its reserves and surpluses, because the costs are far below what they are collecting presently. Now, if you include part one, I mean, if you go to the slide before in your slide, we include part one, which is extension of benefit to a year, 365 days, from 12 months to 365 days. It increases the cost to 1.5. Of the 2% that is getting, 1.5 then will use to use for benefit. And then when you include the part two, which is maternity and illness benefit, the changes that the previous bill, not this bill, the previous bill is introducing, part two, it increased slightly, just slightly there, but still below that line. The most important thing is that line. That line is the 2%, that's what UI is getting, that line. And then when you add part three, which is unemployment benefit cycle, the issue that you should not be able to present, you can't claim every, if you claim, you can only claim again in the next 4 years. You could have 4 years that you put in terms of the cycle. When you when we change that in part three, it increases again, going towards that 2%. And then on the part four, extension on death claims and submission for period of 18 months instead of the present 6 months, which is this, it remains the same as part three, it doesn't make any changes. It's a change of processes, it doesn't have any real financial implication in terms of that. Now, if you look at part six, when you include death claims to allow for nominated benefit, it also really doesn't change, because it's just, part four, it doesn't change because it's no cost effect today. And then if you go to part seven, inclusion of personal learnership, still, I mean, it doesn't make any difference to the fund in terms of that. And then it skips, it does not deal with part eight, it goes to part nine, If you go to part 9, increases a little bit on the issues of maternity claim submission periods from 8 to 12 months. Just a little bit still, but it's manageable. Now, going to the proposal that were made by COSAT-NETLEC, the issue of inclusion of informal employment, which is at part 10, still below that if you include informal employment. Then the inclusion of paternity leave, which is part 11, in terms of this bill that members are talking about, if we include that, it goes above that line by 0.38%. And the proposal that we put and what we look at is that if, because this area, number 10, informal economy, is a very difficult area, and if we must include informal economy, it means that we must change the architect of all our legislation. Remember, all our legislation, if you look at the BCA, it moved from the premises that there's an employer and employee relationship. You must be employed by employer. Now, people who are self-employed, there's no employer. They are themselves an employer. Now, if we must change UI for them to be paid, it means that we must change the Basic Condition of Employment Act on the issue of employer-employer relationship. We must also change, look how does it affect the Labor Relations Act, because also the Labor Relations Act goes the same principle, employer-employee relationship. The unemployment insurance, the same principle applies. It moves from the premises that to be an employee, there must be an employer. You must be employed by somebody to be an employee. And UIF is geared to pay for employees who are unemployed. Now, self-employed, in terms of all our legislation, are not regarded as employees, because there's no employer-employer relationship. It will mean then having a bigger change in terms of our legislation. And the proposal that we put is then if we take out the unemployed, which is number 10, as you indicated, then what happens to 11? Remember, 11 is the paternity payment on part in terms of this bill. Now, if you look on your slides, remember, next slide, please. If you look on your slide, this slide, if you look there, 10, if you look at 10 there, what 10 adds to the expenses of UI is 0.235% in terms of cost. If you add 10, that's what you add in UI cost. Now, if you take out 10, remember we said 10 as it is affordable. But when you put in 11 on top of 10, then 11 becomes unaffordable. But if you take out 10, then 11 becomes affordable also. It comes below the line at 1.83%. If you minus that 2.3. Therefore, our proposal the last time we were here when we made the presentation was that we should, the committee, if it sees in its wisdom, should be able to approve the bill with the exception of 10 as put in there, but include 11, which then will mean that, if you go to the next slide, not the slide before that, then it will mean that if you include 11, but you take out 10, that bar 11 will come to 10, and therefore 10 will be below that line, which is the most important line. If you cross that line, then we've got problems. And that's the proposal. Then the last one, this one, is when you include people who retire, 12. This is the proposal. It's not in the bill, this one, but that's what a labor network is asking for, that we include in the UIF people who resign, and the actuaries are telling us if you do that, that will be the cost, that is 2%, then it will mean that we'll have to increase the UI contribution from both employers and employees to cover that. But it's not part of this bill. Therefore, the way it is, members, anything that you add from 10, it's going to go beyond that line, as you see there at 11. And we are able, as I said, to accommodate paternity leave purely because we're taking it out in formal employment at 2.3%. Therefore, then it reduces to 10. You are not going to have 12 bars, you have 11 now, all of a sudden. And take the next one, please. Just that one, put it here. This give a projection on the fund solvency ratio. What would be the finance of the funds look like if we include PAR 11 as it says, and therefore it indicates the this line top line indicates without any change, if we don't add anything, the solvency ratio is going to go up by 1,200%. If you include up to that 10 for the next 11, this is what it's still increasing. But if you include 12, as you said, this is what happens to the solvency ratio. It goes down. Therefore, in terms of the actual report, the proposal is that the fund is in a position to cover, in terms of cost, all the proposals that are in this bill that the members are dealing with, if only if we take out the informal employment, if we include the others, it will then spend more than 2% of contribution, and that if you include the resignation and the others. And our proposal, members would want here is that if we approve the bill on the basis that then informal is going to be outside that, and on those basis it's going to be affordable. And there's, as I said, there's agreement at NetLeg to wait for another maybe 2 years to see what all of this, the previous bill that you approved, that is in the select committee now, and this bill, because these are projections, actually sometimes also get it wrong. sometimes they do get it wrong, but we must err on the side of caution and say if they are right, then it will affect the fund negatively. But if they are wrong, nothing, it doesn't take anything away. We might, there's nothing wrong in us coming back in a 2 year time and say things are not what we thought they are. We can increase the benefit that we propose, like resignation and the other, and those that are proposed by the legal advisor for Parliament can also be looked at that time, depending on what are the effects of these proposals that we're making.
Okay, thank you so much. You are done. Okay. Remember, you want to say something, legal advice? Okay. Members, can we deliberate on the report? And I think thank you very much, Ms. Mukalipi. It's even much more clear than before, because now you are talking figures. And the hand that I've seen is the first hand was Honorable Collins, and the second hand was Honorable Lolio. Those two hands for now. And the third one is Mr. Mko, is Honorable Mko, in that order, Honorable Ollis, Honorable, and then Honorable Mko.
Thank you, Chairperson. Is this mic working?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Sorry, I'll try and sit closer. Just, I think we should have a moment of silence to start with, because the US have just elected that stupid Trump as their next president. So
yeah.
I'm sorry to have to bring you the news. He just won. Yeah. He's just won, and I think we should really go into mourning. But anyway, that's just an aside. In terms of this bill, I have three questions, Chairperson, but they might need the legal advisor rather than Mr. Mukalipi, but I don't mind your answers. And these questions arise because I started asking our caucus members to tell me how they feel about it and so on. And I mean, I think we're going to get support there, but there's technical questions. So I have three questions. The first question I was asked this morning is, what happens in terms of the parental leave if the mother of the child dies early on, in childbirth or in 2 weeks after the baby is born, the mother dies? Does the father still only get 10 days? Because now he has a child on his hands as a baby, and the mother is gone. So I'm not sure what the answer is there, and I need some clarity on that. The second one is something which was explained, but perhaps I'm just dumb. I don't always get every detail. In the case of adoption, which leave applies to which? Because we've got cases, of course, of adoption where it is a mother and a father. We've got a case of adoption in the case of the LGBT sector where you might have two females or two males. I'm just not 100% sure, and that's just because I didn't get the details. You know, it was explained, but I didn't catch on. And then if we could just get a definition for the phrase, the commissioning parents. I just need to be 100% clear. What does the phrase commissioning parent specifically mean? Which parent is it talking to, and how do I know? Because I'm going to get asked these questions when I make a formal presentation to my caucus, and I must have the answers, otherwise I'm going to look like I haven't studied this book properly. So those three, they're technical nature. Chair, I just need to understand those three things so that I can make a proper a report to my caucus. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. In joining Honourable Onister, I think Home Affairs would tighten the security in the border if Trump had won.
I agree. I'll second that.
I want to welcome this report. This is coming for the second time. I think maybe it was premature when it came. We never focused more on its contents, but now the contents are more relevant. I just want to zoom in the recommendations. I agree with all the recommendations that are contained there, except the last bullet. The last bullet is saying we need to identify proposals that can be considered later. If you look at the trend, the budget of the department is not increasing, instead it has been reduced. Let us not preempt that, let it happen on its own, that further proposals, because having that bullet may be welcoming people to come with ideas which are not going to be able to be carried financially. Otherwise, I personally am lobbying now on the fact that when we have further addition on the bill, the financial muscle is not going to carry the burden. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think we must all welcome this presentation. To me, it made more sense than what I was listening last week, because it was confusing me, and then there were a lot of issues that were raised between the researcher and the department, which I agree with last week in terms of cost in relation to policy option. But now it's more clear. You see, as legislators, there's one thing that we need to always consider or take into cognizance when we are making laws, especially laws that are having financial implications, is for our capacity to save for future generations. Not only to spend money for current generations, because we are transferring burden, unnecessary burden, by the way, to future generations, and they can collapse in future. So the graph that I was watching there, they are cautioning us whether these savings that we have are going to have or are going to be sustainable for future generations and their contributions for other future generations. So fundamentally, I'm happy to see that particular question. Secondly, I like the maturity of conservation in terms of financial implications. For an example, the proposal that says, let's substitute Part 10 for Part Leverage, it makes a very serious sense. Because if you substitute Part 10 for Part 11, now we are starting to say that these are considerations that are going to make in future when we see that conditions are changing and the research has been made properly. Because when I was reading this yesterday, I was thinking that why don't we speak to the Department of Small Business to understand that much? But now I can understand what you're reading. When you are saying that, no, it is people that are self-employed, so there's no relationship, according to law, between an employer and an employee. But someone else can go to with an argument of worker cooperatives and so forth, where you cannot fight a direct employer and an employee, but that is not the case now. But what is very important for me is to understand why Part 5 and Part 8 is not part of food card. If you look at your graph, there's Part 1, and then we are jumping, there's Part 6, and then after 7, we are jumping, there's Part 9. What is happening about Part 5 and Part 8? What is the issue there? You know? What's the issue? I just want to know that. Fundamentally, you're saying that Part 12 is not part of the deal. It was not part of the deal. So it's new things that are happening, because when we read the whole report that is coming about the proposals that are coming, all organizations seemingly agreed with the deal in principle, but said, if you can consider these issues, so they're not strong on those matters, but the matters that they are proposing, which are the future proposals that Honorable Lolu was talking about, which could be considered in future, if that's the case. So I think now it's more clearer to me, but I have those particular questions and comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mukwege. Honorable Lepa, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I apologize for missing some of the presentation from PPI. I apologize. Sorry about that. I just wanted to ask something in theory. In theory, it's an unemployment insurance fund. Why would we even put on the agenda the inclusion of persons in the informal sector, because they're not employed? So there's no employment there. They employ themselves. What we could do is we could have people abusing that wholly. So I just want to know, where do we draw the line in terms of the philosophy of what this fund is for? Thank you for that.
Thank you, Honourable Buckley. Can I give over to either legal advisor or Mr. Mkongi? Sorry, Mr. Mkalipi, to respond.
Thank you, Chair. I think I should start asking my responsibility that long. I think there were three questions that I were carried to me. The first one was that I think in terms of the responsibility from other daughters. At the moment, I was just, how it is structured is that the mother, when she applies for maternity leave, she has to inform the employer beforehand, and there has to be a birth, and there has to be a doctor. If the mother then dies later, the act doesn't say what that means. I'm not sure whether she may have said in the law, I'm not sure, but it's not clear from the echo patterns to that she may die after the child's birth. So the act, the father, at the moment, the father can't implement the claim of claim and policy. For the father to claim parental leave, he will need to register as a father child, I mean, as the father of the child, and in terms of the birth and the implementation. 14.5 that was the issue that took us issues of the news that in its I suppose if the committee wants to look at something like that, then you also need to think about how are you going to, if you're married, then I suppose you can, by virtue of the fact that you're married, you're the father of the child. But if it's now somebody that is not married, you are to look at such as to see how abusive that system can be taken out. At the moment, it's not practical. Then the second one, it applies to the adoption you get them. Now, the applicant is written a gender neutral way. So the adoption leave can be taken either by the female or can be taken by the male. If the one takes the 6 weeks adoption leave, then the other one can take the 6 days of the adoption leave. So it's at the option of the two adopted parents who want to take each. The same as the issue with parents. The third question that relates to what the commission is here. Now, in terms of the bill, it says that the commission is here and that the same reason which is assigned to the Children's Act. Now, in the Children's Act, if you look at Section 1 of the Children's Act, it says that a commission is here means a person who enters into a surrogate mother's agreement with a surrogate mother. So that can be either one person, which means I get a surrogate having my child, and it could be then with a donor. Or it could be the two parents that decide to come and make use of our surrogate mother. So, but that is regulated because the Children's Act and the court process is a formal document. So, at the moment, the means that is defined to that section and what it means is the same as applies to this law. Thank you.
Can we ask further, are there any further questions on this issue, Honourable Olin? Before we get to other questions, are you clarified?
No, she's explained
okay.
To me on everything.
Okay, so we can deal with other questions. Thank you.
Chair, I wanted just also to the issue of the child and the mother who died. I mean, remember that in terms of the BCA, the person who's pregnant is not to allow to work a month before they give birth. They've got to take maternity leave. And in practice, people who are going to give birth apply for unemployment insurance funds before, in that period. Now, let us assume that you apply for unemployment insurance fund a month before you take maternity leave. You put on your forms, everything you put on, and then you give birth 3 months after that, and then unfortunately you die. The application obviously has got to be finalized, and the money has got to go to the estate of the person who has died, because these are assets of the person that has died. Whether the person is married or not married, how the estate is divided, that's something else. I'm not saying that my colleague is wrong, but I mean that other law that comes into play in this, remembering that you don't apply after maternity. Most women apply before. I'm not saying that you can't apply after you've given birth. You can still apply, but assuming that because almost everybody applies well before they go on the maternity leave, the practice is going to be that if you pass away in that, whoever deals with your estate, that money has got to go through there, because you I talked about payment of money. So I don't talk about the leave itself. It takes the money. Talk about the money. That's the first thing that might come into this issue. That. I needed to explain. Also, assume that then you die after giving birth. Now, obviously, the husband can't adopt, the father can't adopt because it's their children. It will be written in there that it's their children in terms of payment. Now, if if this is the issue now, the question is going to be, if the father is not employed, remember, unemployment is to is security for you, the person losing income. Now, if you are the father, the mother has died, you are not employed, you've lost no income. If let us assume that the mother has not claimed before, the claim has come late, would it be fair for the fund to pay for that? All those are legal issues that courts must deal with it, but I don't think so, because payment of the unemployment fund is to do good what you've lost. If you've lost nothing in terms of income, it's different from adoption leave. Adoption leave is a different, it's not to compensate for loss of income. Even if you are not employed, if you adopt, you can still it's the same. If you are working, you adopt, you can still claim. It's difficult. You can't give a great answer, a straight answer on this. There's going to be a legal question that come up on this issue as you raise it. If, I'm assuming that if you're not employed and your wife dies, the chances of you being able to get money because you've lost no income are very limited. And that was not the intention of unemployment insurance to pay for. Then the question is going to be, why does insurance pay for an unemployed woman who is giving birth if they are going to be paying for an unemployed man who is those are the issues that will come up. But I agree with the issues that my colleague has raised, but I'm adding these complications that might come up. On the issue of my colleague has answered the issue who apply for leave. The issue is about the court decision in terms of adoption. If the court says in terms of the decision that you are the parent, it shouldn't matter, because that certificate from the court indicates it doesn't matter who came, that paper determines the payment. It's not about who came, it's about that paper. And that paper will say who's been adopted, who's adopting who, and the money will be paid to that. Therefore, you're not going to have a situation where you'll be able to change, because it's going to be based on that paper. And the same as his answer the issue of commission. On the absence of part 4 and part 8, they actually dealt with all those areas where there will be financial implications for the fund. And they say in their report where they believe that there's no financial implication. They are not going to be to give any report on it. In those areas that they left out, there are no financial implications. The issue of employment, of informal employment, why do we talk about this? Well, there's international experience on this area. India, there's a lot of informal employees in India, self-employed, who are regarded as employees, who benefit from unemployment insurance, how they do it, you know. And there are countries that have got big informal economies and informal workers. In fact, in terms of ILO language, informal workers, the people who are doing informal work are also regarded as workers, except that that's not our legislation at this stage. Therefore, there is international experience in this area that deals with informal employees, self-employed informal workers. That's where this is coming from. And the best example of this is in India.
Should I wait for that caucus to finish? Okay. Any questions? Honorable Mkongi?
Just for future, there are issues that need to be tightened to try to caution or buffer for future litigation that could come. Don't undermine the question. Because the argument says a person losing an income who is employed, therefore can get the unemployment insurance fund. And the argument says that the husband or the partner was unemployed. Technically, that person loses income because the wife has passed away, therefore, there is a loss of household income. So I'm saying, for future, we need to check that, because you can find a fine line of technicality that can litigate you, and many people, millions, can come and milk the department on that fundamental question. So it is very fundamental, because when you go to talk about why UIF does not pay for an unemployed woman who gave birth, and you relate that to that, you are opening very serious kind of for litigation. So I'm just cautioning, I'm saying, there are areas that we must close, you know, to make sure that we caution and buffer for people future litigation.
Honorable, just a second. Honorable Khawula, are you, is the follow-up or is a new question? Because if it's a new question, then I would want them to respond to the comment, because Honorable Kongi is commenting, and that comment requires a response. So should I allow, okay, please, department. Department,
Thank you, Chair. I think I wanted to separate the two issues. Honorable Ollis was asking in terms of the benefit of around leave. I think that one is a legal question. But when you talk about the mother dying affecting the birth, there's a death benefit as well. So the father will benefit via the death benefit, because the woman was convicted to a year and therefore she has died, and therefore they can claim a death benefit. So the woman, they're covered in the part, except when you talk about leave, she is first.
I can see that.
Clear now. Honorable Khawula. Thanks, Chair. I think my interest is part A, part 10, but generally I'll say that the proposal seems progressive, although we have to subject to all of each one here. Chair, on part A, it talks about the benefit, the payment of benefits in case of reduced salary. I don't want to assume on the cases of salary reductions. I may assume that probably limited to cases where employers lay off from the leave or short time. But of course, you might have other reductions. It could be reduction. I just want to check the type of reduction, because there are some reductions that could come out of a concern of the employee with the third party, which is still a reduction. So I just want, if they can just indicate the types of reductions, circumstances where one can have a reduced salary, you see. But if it's only related to the format that I indicated earlier on, if they can just explain that, because we need to be specific, because like I say, there could be a number of reductions that one could have. And then on part 10, I was just interested to listen to the answer, because when you talk about, as a matter of principle, I agree with it, but I'm just concerned in terms of the data gathering. What would be the prerequisite for me to apply for a UIF if I've been employed in the informal sector? I could be employed where I originally come from, the township. There are a number of spaza shops, and you find people spending time in a spaza shop. But now that if for some reason I'm terminated, what would be my prerequisite? Because I can tell you, if there is no registration and data gathering in the townships, you will not be able to say this one was paying UIF. Obviously, majority of them are not paying UIF. So I just want to check whether now, is there going to be a deeper capacity for spaza shops to pay UIF for what? Or if that is not the case, what then becomes a prerequisite for me who was employed in that informal sector to access the URL. So I was listening to the question that was asked by the government seriously. If I can just be taken to in terms of the prerequisites and the capacity that the department has. The last one, which is also close to me, the one that relates to the resolution, I see in terms of the evaluation outcome on the presentation, you're making an admission that the most expensive one is you. And I'm raising it deliberately because part of the argument that has been raised against it on a number of forums is that normally resignations are a pre-dismissal by the team sometimes in the employment. So the part one takes, instead of being subjected to a disciplinary process, will then be engaged on resignation, which will, and the part becomes that you don't access the guy for whatever reason. Now I'm trying to check now your consideration because you're making an admission that it's expensive. It's expensive on exactly what's the consideration in terms of that. Because I know for a fact that the argument is that people that are resigning have contributed immensely most of the time on the URL. And technically speaking, they're entitled. But like I'm saying that it has been used as a critical tool. So I'm interested in your thought on that. Thank you.
Honorable Oli.
Thanks, Jess. Just a clarification. Our legal advisor, I was writing down when you spoke, and you referred in the case of adoption to 6 weeks or 6 days, but this draft bill says 10 weeks and 10 days. 10 weeks and 10 days. That's the correct one. Okay, thanks.
So you are withdrawing your question.
Fine.
Okay. Mr. Mkongi? Mkalipi. Mkalipi.
I don't mind becoming honorable. The issue of private shop employees, it's about, I mean, they are covered in terms of the law. The law is clear as it stands now. If you work for more than 24 hours a month, you should be registered and your employer should be paying unemployment. That's like domestic workers, that's like taxi. Taxi is the informal sector. The issue is the enforcement of that. It's an inspection issue. I mean, the department, as I'm sure, we've had presentation in this committee about how the department is beefing up its inspection services to ensure that workers are able to enjoy the rights that they are given in terms of the law. And we're hoping that going forward with the changes that we're making in inspection, we'll be able to increase compliance with legislation as we're going forward. I mean, it's not going to be only unemployment insurance, the issue of compliance. We're talking minimum wage. It's going to be another issue that we've got to make sure that through inspection, we those kind of employers, because it's going to apply to them also, apply the minimum wage and the minimum wage is applicable. Those are changes and those are the issues that we're trying to deal with in terms of enforcement and the capacity. On the issue of resignation, what we're saying here is pure cost. It's about cost. At NetLab, when it was raised, I mean, we understand the argument. I mean, the first thing that we need to put is if your money is in the UI, in your name, and you resign, you cannot claim it, and you get employment somewhere else, the money is still there. You're not losing it, per se. The money is still in your name. You will when you get paid, if you've got employment somewhere else, you will get paid in terms of the money that is in your name in the UI for the period that you must be paid. So you're not losing it, except that you're not getting paid it when you reply. And I mean, there's argument that says that, well, if the person kills somebody in the factory, they dismissed for killing somebody, they get paid to unemployment insurance. If a person resigns for wanting to go and look after his children, for whatever it is, or his house, or if the husband or the wife has been transferred somewhere else, working somewhere else, they don't get paid. Why do you pay a murderer and you don't get paid a good citizen who's taking a decision for their family? That's that argument. But for us, the issue here is the cost. And the actuaries have looked on the application that has come of people that have resigned and projected what is the cost to the fund. Now, we said last time it would be responsible for us to give a benefit and then having to take it back later because the fund can't afford it. If you give it then, if you know that the fund can't afford it, then you must increase a contribution. And we said that when you increase contribution, you've got to be careful that you should not increase unemployment. When you increase costs doing business, and then increase, you give a higher benefit, but more people get out of work through that higher benefit. If you don't have that balance, and that's the issue that we were saying, and therefore there's no principal objection from all the parties of network. It's about the cost of to the fund in particular.
Thank you. Any further questions or comments, Honourable Buckley?
Why does not the answer change?
For you.
The first one that is also concerned is the one of part is starting
to
okay.
If you are correct, the assumption was correct, it's layoff. That's why you get reduced salary because you're not dismissed, but you are in short time, or you are laid off by the employer for a period, and that's what the payment is.
Satisfied? Okay, a lot of questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I must raise one issue arising out of the discussion now about payments for people who resigned. We have an enormous problem in the country at the moment, and that is unemployment. And if people are facing retrenchment and we open a voluntary retrenchment payment, we have people today in the factories, and this happened yesterday in a factory, where everyone volunteered because they wanted to access the money because they had got debt. Now, if you open up resignation and then you get your UIF, you're going to encourage people to resign to access that money as well and to claim the voluntary retrenchment, etc., etc. And we're finding it more and more. Those of us that are sitting at the coalface, and I'm sure you are, you see that. Nowadays, we don't have to have fights anymore with trade unions about retrenchment because of that, because people jump in quickly and want it. And if you, and there's always this people coming, approaching employers saying, change my resignation to a retrenchment so we can cheat the UIF and get it. And some employers are actually saying yes, when they obviously ask for advice, we say you can't do that, that's illegal, that's criminal. But we're seeing this all the time because people have such enormous debt problems. And I'm sure there is some reasoning there, again from a philosophical point of view, that the whole idea of the Labour Relations Act in this country is to ensure that people remain in their jobs. That's the idea. If you go to the Labour Court, that's the first port of call, bums on seats, not people outside the work. So I just thought I'd add that into the pot in terms of the argument. Thank you.
I don't see any meaning of...
Chair, I just want to just want to add my view on this thing of resignation. I think, Chair, we must avoid to look at one child of each all. I believe there are many circumstances that lead to people making resignation. Sometimes some people don't resign because of their choice. Sometimes the choice out of the employment circumstances. And I think as a matter of principle, we should agree that people that reside, they must receive their UIF. But perhaps we may put exceptions. Could be number of things. Could be number of exceptions, looking, considering the cost and referring to. But as a matter of principle, people don't reside, majority of them, out of choice. They reside out of different circumstances. But perhaps must emphasize on laying of exceptions where we avoid the family outside of the family inside. Thank you.
On cases where people, I think that's constructive dismissal. On cases like that, if people do go to CCMA or Labour Court, okay, can you maybe talk on that?
Myself.
Not yourself. Or you understand that, but you still have a reservation.
Yes, I understand fully, Chair.
Yeah.
But it's not always easy sometimes for employees to prove constructive dismissal. I'm just saying that beyond even the circumstances of constructive dismissal, people do resign, not out of their choice, but out of the circumstances in their employment. I'm just saying that let us not take it out and access to UIF based on resignation, but perhaps we must put exceptions to avoid, of course, for example, one, you could say that you can't make a resignation and access UIF after you have been employed less than 5 years. I'm just making an example. But I'm just saying that there are put some exceptions without necessarily doing away with accessing UIF out of regulation. That's all.
Honorable Lollywood, and then Honorable Fonskante.
Thanks, Chair. I am not sure whether Honorable Khawla is saying out of the additional amendments which are taking the bill up the line, we have to pick out only this one and include it. Because I thought the presentation was saying any further amendment to the bill is going to take the cost of the bill up the already set limit. So what is this proposal in actuality?
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm partly covered by Honorable Holloway. I think that I would think that we have the session for clarity seeking questions, and after that, we as the committee will deliberate further on the final approach to the implementation of the bill. So I would really like to urge our members to stick to the proposed approach, and then let us deliberate on the final implementation as a committee. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, members. Any further questions or comments? Honorable Sowama?
Thank you very much. I think the presentation today has helped us a lot. And then I just want to say, I think now there is a movement going on. One thing, obviously, just to ask, let's say, I took what Honorable Pascal said, that we may further deliver. But I just want to ask the department, if someone has just won a case of consultative treatment, can this person still apply for your life?
It's a resounding yes.
Okay. I think we will deliberate further on constructive dismissal, also to take into account that another Profaula was not here when we were dealing with the amendment of UIF. I think it came later.
Yeah, I was here.
Were you here?
I was here.
Is it? But the earlier than me, like that. Because we deliberated on this issue big time. But if we have to go back to it, let's go back to it, so that we are all on the same wavelength. Mm. Honorable Khawula?
Just to answer the question of Honorable Khawula, I was not making any additional thing. I was not making anything additional to the to part 12. I was substantiating why part 12 should be accepted as a proposal without any deviation. So basically I was saying that, remember I said initially all these proposals are progressive, therefore we must accept them as they are. I was just making a point that why I was substantiating the acceptance of part 1. That's basically what the proposal intends.
Okay, that is also reported and accepted. Members, any questions, comments, concerns? Honorable Mukongi?
It's just a point of interest, Chairperson, for future proposals, even if I'm not around. There are issues of contestation that are not part of this bill. And some of them propose that it could be discussions for future, which I agree with you. I just want to know, just clarify, are some of these elements that we're talking about cannot be catered in the essence of a comprehensive social security system? So that could be the kind, some element of this thing cannot be an overall of that framework. For example, where we find people who resign and so forth and so forth, in that broader system where it's going to be, you know, a safety net for all these workers that are coming. I just want clarity.
Honorable Thoma, is it a better clarity or response?
I just want to get into this now, Chairperson. I think it will be safer, some of these engagements, when we do them alone, because we must just be very careful that we don't end up, you know, creating a very big social welfare sort of. Because at the end of the day, we are going to end up trying to accommodate everybody. So I think if we take that line, we might end up going ideological. So I propose that, Chairperson, as Honorable Pascal Vickers said, maybe let's further take it ourselves. I think the Labour Department and the Legal Department have done enough for now. So I'm very satisfied. I was just wondering.
There's a proposal, however, the department wants to say something. Please, go ahead.
Yeah, I kind of understand, Chair. We are part of the comprehensive social security discussion team, and I think we'll bring this matter up, because we are expanding what social security can offer. I don't think we have any harm in taking it into those discussions. And also what I want to indicate, Chair, is what Mr. McCarthy said is we are going to put to implement, we are proposing this implementation, and we are going to look at what would the cost implications be and the impact on the UN department, and then at that time we'll do it. If the cost implications become too hard, we might not have to consider it. So we just need to be careful so that we don't push the UIF down, and as I said earlier, and have nothing for the future, for other solutions. Thank you.
Thank you. Members,
yeah.
I think we are done today with this matter. Any other feelings, or we all agree that we accept the proposals as they are? If I don't want to see heads nodding, I want to hear people talking. Thank you.
I was saying I want to first to this to again congratulate the Labour Department and the legal advisor to do this work in such a short space of time. It is very much benefiting to us. And I think this will help us moving forward so that we finalize this. Thank you.
Any second, Honourable Lollis?
Chairperson, we obviously just need to make the point that we're very happy with the answers given, and I think we're clear about where to go from here. We just need to go and get a mandate from our caucus before we vote on anything. So we're quite happy, I think, with the answers, and we're quite happy as two individuals with the bill. But we obviously need to go and get a mandate before we can commit to anything. That's why I was asking these technical questions, because they're going to ask me when I go to the caucus what about this and what about this.
Thank you, Honourable Ollis. Of course, we are not yet there. It's not like we're adopting it now. We must go back and then consult, and then the committee then will deliberate on these amendments, so that we see which ones we take, we see which ones we edit, and then we can then go forward. But we do understand that we can't beyond what the department can take in terms of other proposals that came from public hearing. Right. Thank you. Thank you so much. Any, I think now we can allow the department to leave. And then just 5 minutes, a 3 minute break so that you can pack your bag.
Because I'm worried just about questions.
Because anything might happen there.
Unannounced in terms of the inspection, it's fine. But unannounced bringing other people, then it's a problem.
No, we'll be happening in terms of cleaning. We want friends to hire a friend in the region. They know how to.
They follow in fact. Don't want to go there.
They
want to introduce them. Then there's a possibility that they will not allow them to eat. We had the same problem. We had the same problem in George. Remember, in George? We had a huge discussion about whether they should come on an invitation or an advisor. Okay. No, that's fine. But with us, no, it's fine. We have a right to conduct inspections.
So that everything is wrapped up.
Quite quickly.
Well, you see, he woke up. And his arm had gone numb.
He must have caught it quite quickly.
when he went to the doctor, he wasn't even over. Fortunately, I was going down. I took the picture. So you get it to the airport, see the doctor.
Did the doctor say it was a stroke?
Yeah. Then he was sent to Joburg, put into hospital for a week.
See, that's quite hectic stuff.
Yeah.
That's not so easy to come right again. Stroke means that there's a vessel in the brain that's controlled.
And you can't drive. No, Eric is not. He goes to the gym.
I don't think there's a human doctor in
the yeah.
I'm talking myself.
Yeah, but stupid people often talk.
I do a lot of gym work.
I think you're right. I think
that's the answer.
It also makes you feel better during the day.
Push. It does. I can feel if I haven't been to the gym for 2 days, I can get different. Yeah, you can eat tired.
Page 5. Page 6. be your adoption if you adopt. So if you are looking for friendship, there's something. Yeah, but so friendship members. Honorable Toam. It's not on.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm moving for an adoption.
Honorable Sawama is moving for adoption of the report. Honorable Lolu. Honorable Lolu has seconded the adoption, so the first quarter report of the Department of Labor 2016-17 has been adopted unanimously. And then the next report is an oversight that we took to Northern Cape. First page. Second page. Third page. Fourth page. Fifth page. Seventh page. The last page, which is page 8. Adoption. Not a brutal one. Thank you, Chair, and you for the adoption of this report. Thank you, Honorable Tongwana. She has moved for the adoption. Honorable Khawula.
I second, Chair.
The report is seconded by Honorable Khawula. So the report of the oversight visit to the Northern Cape has been adopted.
Just an observation. Yeah, I was drawn to the attention that there is a deficiency in chocolate with chai.
Can you put on here?
Yes, it has started in Pretoria to absorb as a result of our oversight an employee that was employed to service provider, the cleaner. There are two of them, so they are employed directly. So I hope it's a process to other problems.
Thanks, Chair. Then this is a good observation that they've acted after our flesh. And the last report will be public hearing. Page 1. page 2. Page 2 will start with number 1 in bracket. Do you have that page? Can you quickly help us to page Salam before we show confusion? Kosha is not here. Please can you you can also ask him before number is number for number. So that's the confusion. Manual number is you can number it yourself.
Yeah.
Then there's no confusion.
Yeah.
Okay. You have it. Okay. Now we are done with number 2. Number 2. Number 3. I thought that you've messed up the paper. So this, you know, number 3, number 4. Number 5. Number 6. The last page. Number 7.
I propose adoption.
Honorable Bartling is proposing for adoption. Honorable Sowama is seconding the adoption of the report. So the report on public hearing here in Parliament has been adopted. Another issue on the agenda. Honorable Pancel Page. You want to talk on the issue on the agenda, number 9, the last issue. Thank you. And Honorable Pancel Page, second day. The meeting is such an...
I don't know.
Isn't it good because they have adopted the report?